Why must the beginning of a journey be a saying goodbye? As we begin our ministry together, with me occupying this pulpit and that office that has been so beautifully painted, I want to honor the new beginning as well as the difficulty of welcoming a new minister. I acknowledge that your welcoming me is happening not long after you had to say goodbye. You had to say goodbye to Reverend Terry, and only a year after that, Reverend Carla. I feel very blessed to have enjoyed a full year of sabbatical, for if I had come directly from Salt Lake City, I would have been carrying with me a congregation of people who were very sad. So as we begin, let us give room, some spaciousness around the farewells that have brought us here. Let us give some room. My grandfather, Frank Hunter Brown, was the youngest son of immigrant parents, both from Scotland. His father, James Brown, had left Carluke, Scotland, in Lanarkshire, if any of you are familiar with Scotland, a place of great disparity in income. He left there for a new life, even though many of my relatives like to point out some lesser nobility someplace. Actually, there was a lot of poverty, and that drew them to this country. As the people now at our borders, I'm trying not to make that poop sound. Here, maybe I'll move away a little bit. If you can't hear me, would you please raise your hands? Because I'm feeling concerned over that. Anyway, as the people who are now at our borders, my ancestors were searching for a better life, which meant for them getting in a ship and going to the other side of the sea. My grandfather Brown loved to tell this story. Once upon a time, there was a young man who spent most of his hard-earned money on a ticket to cross the oceans. His family helped him fill his suitcase with provisions of dried and pickled food, probably some dried haggis or something like that, that he could eat during the crossing so that he wouldn't have to spend any of his sparse funds on the dining room. And the passage was hard with storms, and his room, I imagine, was small and dark. I imagine it actually wasn't a single room, but that was never clear in the story. And I know he didn't have a porthole because as you, any of you who've been on a ship journey, if you have any view out, it's expensive. So I'm sure he had nowhere to view the sea. And finally, on the last evening, with the lights of the harbor in the distance, he decided to splurge and go into the dining room. When he entered and gave his name and prepared to pay, the maitre d' said, "Oh, it's so good to see you. Have you been ill? We wondered why you haven't been coming to the dining room for meals." That was how the young man discovered that meals had been included in his ticket. At this point, my grandfather, with his twinkling blue eyes, would ask, "What is included in your ticket?" We often discover in hindsight what was in our ticket. We see what we had. As French author Colette wrote, "What a wonderful life I've had. I only wish I'd realized it sooner." And as my grandmother, death sometimes opens our eyes to opportunities that we missed. After my grandfather died, the Frank Brown who told the story, he died before he was 70, she said to me, "Frank often wanted me to come and watch the sunset with him, and most evenings I felt I was just too busy. I was fixing dinner or putting the final touches on a painting." She wished that she had dropped everything and watched the sunset with him. And sometimes, for me, ideas, because we often ask each other that question, "What's on your ticket?" And sometimes those ideas about what I didn't think was on my ticket, like that young man, hit me all of a sudden. A couple of weeks ago, as I was beginning here, I started to feel angry at Louis, our small dog, because of his slow pace and incessant sniffing at bushes and relieving himself one drop at a time. Our ambling walks for the past almost 4 years have not been workouts. Even though 4 years ago, when we went through that process of finding Louis and rescuing him, we thought that was certainly on our ticket. We would walk every day briskly down the road. But 2 weeks ago, all of a sudden, I realized the truth. Louis was in between me and being in shape. I expounded to Mary Lou about how much I needed a real walk, not a Louis walk, a real walk. And the next day, she took Louis out to do his business. And then we left him in the house and took a faster walk, 30 minutes at a clip going up and down hills. And Louis stood at the window watching us leave and gave us that look when we got back, that forlorn look. He wouldn't take a treat. You know how it's bad when they don't take a treat. So that evening, we felt bad enough. We decided to give him another chance. And we took him on our new brisk 30-minute walk. And after a little bit of pulling when he wanted to linger by a bush, and those few moments when we let him stop, we aren't that bad, we let him stop to do his business, he kept up with us. And now, for more than a week, all three of us have been enjoying a workout. And I wonder if Louis is thinking, "Boy, finally those women can give me a real walk." In order to discover what is on our shared ticket, we can't make assumptions of what each other wants. We must communicate when these ideas erupt. Ideas that were maybe hidden somewhere, that we just considered were just the way things were, like I did about Louis's ambling walk. So I ask you, is there anything that you, we, are not able to imagine as ours for the asking? only a few days ago was the time of the Perseid, and I think, is that correct? I should have asked Drew before the, anyway, the Perseid meteor shower. But with the full moon, those shooting stars were not visible until 4 a.m. So we set an alarm and actually got up when it went off. Went outside, leaned back, and watched for that mysterious phenomenon of the heavens. And we felt that deep connection between two humans who have lived together a very long time, and our dog, who was like a kind of hot water bottle in the cold. We all together leaned back in the midst of something of infinite size and beauty. And last week, on Monday, during the vigil to mourn with the loved ones of the victims of the mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, those of us who gathered, we shared silence while the names of the victims were being read. And there was power in that silence of humans gathering to remember and mourn. We need to make those times of shared silences. When we are present to one another, as we were during the joys and concerns, that is part of our shared ticket together. And the first part that is very important to me that I would write on our ticket. A few days before, we left Virginia, so it was about 2 months ago. Right before we left Virginia to travel west, we got in our car and drove south through Williamsburg to the settlement of Jamestown. And we explored the ruins of that town, a light shower of rain falling as we walked by the wide, deep river where ships had docked from over 400 years ago. When we had studied the history of that state, which I did during our 9 months there, we couldn't help but notice the dates. 2019 marked 400 years since the first ship carrying Africans arrived on this continent. A ship that changed everything, or more correctly, decisions not to liberate, but to continue the trajectory of slavery, changed everything in our country, continues to shift everything. And just as the vigil on Monday, I believe in this August of 2019, 400 years later, we need to share this moment together. It was August 1619. This is a poem by Clint Smith. In August 1619, a ship arrived in Point Comfort, Virginia, carrying more than 20 enslaved Africans, the first on record to be brought to the English colony of Virginia. They were among the 12.5 million Africans forced into the transatlantic slave trade, their journey to the New World today known as the Middle Passage. Over the course of 350 years, 36,000 slave ships crossed the Atlantic Ocean. I walk over to the globe and move my finger back and forth, between the fragile continents, I try to count how many times I drag my hand across the bristled hemispheres, but grow weary of chasing a history that swallowed me. For every 100 people who were captured and enslaved, 40 died before they ever reached the New World. I pull my index finger from Angola to Brazil and feel the bodies jumping from the ship. I drag my thumb from Ghana to Jamaica and feel the weight of dysentery make an anvil of my touch. I slide my ring finger from Senegal to South Carolina and feel the ocean separate a million families. The soft hum of history spins on its tilted axis, a cavalcade of ghost ships wash their hands of all they carried. I invite you now into a few moments of silent lament. Let us acknowledge all ships are not the same. And now I return to my grandfather's ship and ask again, thinking of that young man, what do you want on your ticket? What do you want on our ticket? As I have said, I want a lot of shared silence. Do you know this has been a hard-won new beginning? This has been tough. I only need to ask Art and the members of the search team who put huge energy into getting a new minister. And Mary Lou and I, in Virginia, thinking we were gonna stay there for a very long time, needing to shift like a big steamship, and then pack and unpack. And now, don't we get a reward for that? What do you think? Yeah. You want a reward? Yeah. Our reward, I believe, is this new beginning. And I believe in a new beginning, especially with, I don't know much yet. So I am more able to dream boldly, but I'm inviting you into that beginner's mind. I'm inviting you to dream boldly with me. Another thing I want on this ticket, there are two words I have written, joy and ease. So whatever you want to dream boldly, don't make the meeting on my day off, which is Monday. I love the things that I know are already on my ticket. I love being able to represent you at a vigil. I love sitting with you with your marvelous stories, your passion for the earth, for other people, the courageous ways you are living your lives. And in that listening and reading, I love looking for words that I can share with you during our Sunday services, and that I hope will inspire you, make you take a deep breath in and dive even more deeply into life. My vision of what I see as our ticket is just beginning to unfold. And here I invite you to consider all of your big dreams. And in your order of service, there are announcements. And on the back of that is a wonderful steamship ticket that was created by Heather Knowles. And I invite you, if you have some dreams and you don't need to add your name if you don't want to be connected with it, but write your dreams and make sure that they get to me. Mary Lou's aunt, who died very young in her 50s, she said to Mary Lou before her death, she said, as she was thinking she probably only had a few months or a year, she said, "I wish I had asked more from life." Let us ask for more. This is the time. For the beginner's mind holds wisdom, unexpected wisdom, and courage. We have restarted conversations about raising this roof. And if it doesn't happen physically, because I'm not a fortune teller, the choir will be able to do it through the sheer power of their voices. I invite you to dream wildly. And let us keep ourselves from making assumptions and not getting caught up in what didn't work before. And catch me if I say, "Well, that didn't work in Salt Lake City." You can just say, "I don't care about Salt Lake City." But we're starting to get, so that's how it feels to me. "Well, we tried that 5 years ago and it was a bomb." Well, I'm inviting you into a big conversation, a bold conversation where we will make mistakes. And if you're thinking that I'm not up for something, perhaps like our dog Louie, I'm just waiting for you to get the idea. Let us dive deep into that unknown of what is on our ticket. Are you ready to begin?
Yes.
Yes. Are you ready to begin?
Yes.
Okay, that sounded better. I invite you to please rise in body or spirit, and we will sing "Guide My Feet," number 348.